You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers. Today's show is sponsored by Group Health Cooperative of South Central Wisconsin, a nonprofit, member-owned health plan providing high-quality health care and health insurance services to over 85,000 members living in South Central Wisconsin.
We also want to announce that we are so excited about our new and still growing civic media network of radio stations, and we are doing something big to celebrate. How does $1 million in advertising giveaway sound to you? Save the date, January 26th. You'll be able to fill out an application for a piece of our giveaway and your chance to work with Civic Media sales team to create radio advertising campaign promoting your business across our network for free. The $1 million giveaway starts at 9 a.m. only on Thursday, January 26th. You can learn more on the Civic Media website.
Yep. And when you go, please be sure to let everyone know you heard about the $1 million advertising giveaway on the Empowered Caregiver Show with Liza and Kristen. Tonight, we're here with Molly Cooney and Tammy Jackson from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. We know Molly well because she was kind enough to oversee a couple of grants that the board gave us focused on employment issues for people with disabilities. Molly, thanks for joining us. Will you just talk for a moment or so about your title at the board and why you came tonight to talk to us? Please.
Uh-oh.
We're not hearing Molly at the moment.
But we can start with, we have another guest with us, Tammy Jackson, who is also from the board. So we'll start with Tammy. Tammy, what is your title at the board and what brought you here today?
He fixed it.
Oh.
Okay, Evan, now we're not hearing Tammy, but he's giving us a thumbs up for Molly. Evan is our fabulous producer that we've never actually even had on air much.
No, that is correct.
But we're going to punt while Evan figures this all out. So you're going to hear me lisp and kind of make weird noises because I had Mohs surgery today. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the fact that they were helping me with my skin cancer. But what I didn't know is that they were going to tell me that I couldn't talk or smile for a week. I was like, wow, I run a radio show and a few hours and all I do all week long is talk and laugh and smile. So
yeah,
I don't know how this healing's going to go.
I don't know either. It'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. I just can't get past your sippy cup. It just brings back too many memories. I thought my sippy cup days were over, yep. And here you are.
I know. Let's see. Can we hear you guys yet? Molly, check in.
Hey, check, check.
Sweet. Check, check, check. She's like official. Oh, yes. All the check, checks. I love it.
All right. So we have Molly here from the, Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. Molly, if you want to just introduce yourself and tell us your title at the board and a little bit what we're going to talk about today.
Okay. So my title is Program Policy Analyst, which doesn't mean a whole lot necessarily. I oversee some of our projects and also oversee our evaluation and our federal reporting. I'm here today to talk about some of the projects that the board has, a little bit about what the board does, and some ways that people can get involved if they would like to be.
Awesome.
And I'll pass it off to Tammy.
And I have a equally meaningless title. I am a program policy analyst too, but I do completely different things than Molly. I'm also the legislative liaison for the board. So my work is really trying to figure out what kind of policies do we need to change either through the state budget or the legislature or in state agencies to make lives easier for people with disabilities and caregivers. And I'm going to talk tonight about ways that you can participate in the exciting state budget process and get to know the decision makers that will influence all sorts of things that are important to family caregivers.
Excellent. It's so exciting to have both of you here, and they didn't get much notice. And so we really appreciate you guys taking time tonight. It's obviously a very important topic and timely because the governor's budget is getting proposed very soon. And we really wanted to get some folks in that really understand what the caregiver needs are and what the caregiver asks or what the asks are going to be for family caregivers. So it's great that you guys joined us. Molly, you know the board has a special place in our hearts. part because our listeners know that both Liza and I are family caregivers to adult children with developmental disabilities. And a long time ago, many years ago, we found you guys and have done a lot of programs with you. So I think you're going to do a better job than me, though, in explaining who the board is and sort of what the mission of the board is.
Sure, absolutely. So the board is considered a developmental disabilities council, and every state and territory in the United States has a developmental disabilities council, which is charged with identifying what the most pressing needs of people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and the needs of their families, and figuring out cost-effective and innovative ways to meet those needs. And then when we identify strategies or approaches that work, then we aim to scale them up. So we try to get them embedded into service systems and already existing programs and supports. So that way people across the state have access to these approaches or ideas that work to help them be as involved and contributing members of their communities as they want to be. Because that's our ultimate goal, is that people with disabilities and their families are living full lives how they would like to live.
How long have you been working for the board?
Maybe about 5 or 6 years.
Okay. And what would you say is the program that you are probably the closest attached to, or the most that has, like, you know, a special place in your heart?
Probably our new one, which is called Families Supporting Families.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. This is a partnership with the Department of Public Instruction. We are supporting 5 community-based organizations run by people of color who are primarily serving people of color to provide the supports and, you know, connection that they see is most useful and valuable for their families. So we're really just providing extra funding to help them continue or grow their work. So it has a very bottom-up approach. You know, what do you know that's going to work best for your families, rather than dictating this is what you need to do? Mm-hmm. And we're just seeing, you know, amazing things happen when you bring families together.
That's awesome, especially because we know that that group has been totally marginalized in general, but definitely in the world of disabilities, right? And we've been really talking about how can we make sure that people of color and other groups that are marginalized, like the LGBTQ families, how can we get them into some of the stuff that we're trying to do, but, you know, we don't have those connections. So this is great that you're kind of building that community within the community. So thank you. Tammy, what about you? Can you please explain a little bit about why the board is involved in advocacy work?
Well, like Molly said, you know, the role of councils is to be innovative and to figure out what are the needs and how do we do it. We're very much doers and implementers. And one of the ways that you implement something is public policy. And sometimes that can be small. It can be, you know, a change, like Molly was saying, and just how do we approach running a program? But a lot of times in the history of the disability movement, we've needed really big changes, like new laws, mm-hmm. or changes to existing laws, or money for certain programs and more money to really impact people's lives and help them live the lives that they want to live. So advocacy work is deeply embedded in all councils' work. We're actually an independent state agency, and a part of our charge is to advise both the governor and the legislature on disability policy. And we take that role very seriously, as we have a board that is composed of people like yourselves, people who are family members and people with disabilities themselves all over the state. And we take the people who we know, not only through our board members, but just through our work, and try and bring you with us in our path to changing all sorts of different public policies. And to give you some examples, we do a lot of work in Medicaid and the home and community-based long-term care programs like Family Care and IRIS. We're talking about caregiving today, and the paid caregiving workforce is paid through those programs.
Yep.
We do a lot of work in non-driver transportation and special education, and all sorts of things that you wouldn't necessarily think are disability issues, but they impact people with disabilities and their families differently or more so because of that, of those disabilities. And we're here to kind of raise the flag and say, hey, this affects us, or hey, here's a way that you could do this differently that would make things better.
So I have a follow-up question or something that just came to mind while you're explaining that. When you gather your data to go before the legislators and say that this is what needs to be done, do you get that exclusively from the people at the board? Do you have listening sessions, or how can people out in the community make sure that their voices get heard?
You know, we do listening sessions across the state. We have a 5-year state plan that is created from what we hear from people all throughout Wisconsin. And some of the needs that Molly talks about, the way we make decisions about how are we directing our money, it's all rooted in that state plan. It's all rooted in what are people actually saying the needs are right now. And of course, we interact with folks all the time. And you know, surprisingly, there's a lot of themes. Mm-hmm. Family caregiving is something we hear a lot about, and rightly so, because people like yourselves are struggling all over the state. We hear it a lot about paid family care, you know, paid workforce. The problems that folks are facing, you are not alone. There is someone in your neighborhood who you don't know who is probably struggling in the same way that you are right now.
We definitely are learning that as we started the show. We've got 2 minutes before we go to our break. I would love it if Molly and then Tammy could both just give us a quick explanation of your personal connections and experiences with family caregiving. How about you first, Mal?
So personally, I am a parent of 2 children. Neither of them have significant developmental or intellectual disabilities, so I don't have that personal experience. I've watched other people who are in the caregiving, you know, realm. One thing I've been thinking about regarding that question is just that I think COVID exposed a lot of the invisible labor that women do and caregivers are doing. And I think it's so important that we should, you know, shine a light on that, because it shouldn't go unappreciated, unshared, and unpaid.
Exactly.
To some degree. So that's my experience, I would say.
Great. Thanks. And Tammy?
Well, I'm currently the mother of 2 small children who have high needs, not special needs, just high toddler needs. Mm-hmm. And also I've been a caregiver for aging parents and grandparents. So we've had a multi-generational household and part of that sandwich generation, which I think a lot of your listeners are as well.
Oh, definitely. And I was there myself, and Liza's soon to be in that path.
Exactly. I can't wait to get into more about what the board does after this short break. Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we are here today with Molly Cooney and Tammy Jackson from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. And Tammy, I can't wait to jump into this budget discussion. Said no one ever, right? except for me.
Because we're actually really excited that you're here, because we did want to understand it, because there's a piece of it I'm very confused by.
Right. So if you could just start out by explaining the governor's budget and why we're talking about it today.
Well, the state budget is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
It's the biggest bill that passes in each 2-year session of the legislature. And Wisconsin's budget is about $50 billion.
Wow.
So gives you a scale of what we're talking about here. The legislature has 2 major functions, and one of them is to pass a state budget bill. Why is the state budget important? It's where Wisconsin decides how to invest the money that comes into the state. When we pay our tax bills, when the federal government gives us money to do things, all of the fees you pay, the revenue that's generated, it all comes into the state, and then we have to figure out what do we do with it. And a lot of disability programs and services, things like family care, IRIS, the Children's Long-Term Support Program, Katie Beckett, public transportation, special education, DVR, you get it. They all get money they use to run from the state budget. State budget is developed over many months, and there's a ton of opportunities for citizen advocates to influence what gets funded. And that's where you come in. You can be a budget influencer too. So we talk about the budget like it's the governor's budget, but it really is a combined effort between the governor and the legislature. Both have a big role in what's included. And the governor introduces essentially the first draft of the budget in February. And he's announced that February 15th is going to be when he announces his budget address. And that'll be the kind of an opportunity for us to see what's in that document. It's usually more than 1,000 pages long.
Right.
The legislature can then decide to use that governor's budget as its starting point to make edits, or they can choose to write their own version of the budget. And there's a process where the legislature has a special committee. It's 16 members, 8 from the state Senate and 8 from the state assembly. They're called the Joint Finance Committee, and they are in charge of thinking through absolutely everything that's in that state budget. Making edits, adding things, deleting things, all sorts of stuff can happen in joint finance. And then it goes back to the legislature who passes it. And then it goes back to the governor who can veto parts or the entire budget passed by the legislature. So that's kind of the long process in a nutshell. Usually there are public hearings on the budget, and everybody can, all legislators have an opportunity to influence the budget. They can during the Joint Finance Committee process, and they all have to vote on the final version of the state budget before it can pass. So every legislator is important, and all of you have two legislators, a state senator and a state representative, who you can talk to about the budget and family caregiver issues.
Great. I have a couple technical questions, Tammy. So who determines how somebody gets on the Joint Finance Committee?
The majority leader in the Senate and the speaker in the assembly make all of the committee appointments, okay, including who is on joint finance.
So,
and they make those appointments in December.
Okay. And so those appointments are made as 8 senators and state senators and 8 of the assembly folks. Does it have to be balanced Republican, Democrat, or not necessarily?
The makeup of the committee is actually based on who is in the majority of both houses.
Okay.
So in this case, we have the Republicans have the majority in both the Senate and the Assembly.
Right.
And so they have the majority of the seats on the Finance Committee. And of course, the Democrat minority leaders also appoint their 2 members. But the way it works out, because the Republicans control both houses, we have 6 Republicans and 2 Democrats on both sides. So there are a total of 12 Republicans and 4 Democrats on the Finance Committee.
Okay. And I know Liza's got some questions, but I'm curious about, is it fair to say that family caregiving is a nonpartisan issue or a bipartisan issue, that it's something where we are seeing the Democrats and the Republicans coming together?
I'll put it to you this way. There is no district in this state that does not have the same challenges faced by constituents with regard to family caregiving.
Right.
I'm not sure how many members understand the severity of what people's experiences are. And we have a lot of new legislators. And certainly family caregiving has not gotten the high profile that the plight of paid workers has. So it is a huge opportunity for family caregivers to remind and educate legislators that we're here as an invisible, unpaid workforce.
Okay. We've got 2 minutes before we go to break, and we have some budget requests that the board has put together, right? So we have the flyer that you guys have emailed out. And I see that there are 4 bullet points underneath help family caregivers. Create an employee-funded state insurance fund. Expand who can use FML leave, family and medical leave, to include grandparents, grandchildren, and siblings. Establish a family caregiving tax credit and increase respite funding by $200,000. I understand the last 3. It's the first one that's really confusing me. I'm not sure if we have enough time for you to explain it before break. I don't know.
Let's give it a whirl.
Okay.
And if Evan gives me the hook, then we'll pick up.
We'll pick up after, right?
So there has been resistance towards the idea of family and medical leave, partly because, you know, employers do have to pay for that time for employees. And it's the model that we're talking about here is employees contributing money out of their paycheck so that if they have to take that leave, it is paid. And it works very similarly to how you put in money for your paycheck for Medicare, for example, and expect that there will be a benefit when you retire.
When it's time
same
for you to
kind
use it.
Of mechanism.
Oh,
so that
okay.
There isn't, there's paid family care, like leave.
Okay, so it's making more sense to me. So I'm going to come back and try to recap it and see if I got it right. I get to try to be the student and you get to be the teacher. We'll be back in just a second. You're listening to Kristen and Liza with the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been talking with Molly Cooney and Tammy Jackson about their work with the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities and how that group is advocating for some very specific things for family caregivers in Governor Evers' upcoming budget proposal. Right before the break, I read some very legislative-y type words. And I spent hours, I don't even want to admit how many hours, trying to interpret these by myself as a former social studies teacher, and I just couldn't do it. So I had to admit, and I think what Tammy said, I'm sort of on with. So I'm going to read what's here in the request in the legislazy, political easy words, and then I'm going to try it in my own. So one of the things that we're asking for from the budget in order to put a focus on helping family caregivers is to create an employee-funded state insurance fund to offer paid medical and family leave for part-time and full-time employees. So I was tripped up because I thought this was saying that all state employees had to do this. And I'm like, well, there's all kinds of other employees that aren't state employees. So I think what you explained, Tammy, is that we want employers to have to have more opportunities for funds to be taken out of their employees' income and be set aside for them to have paid family medical leave if they have any of these family caregiving issues come up. How right am I? How wrong am I?
That's essentially right. We want people to be able to reserve a portion of your paycheck and be able to set it aside. So if you need to take FMLA, mm-hmm. you can have that time paid. That the money you set aside comes back to fund the time that you're taking. And the really important part about all of those legislative words is part-time and full-time employees. Because right now, if you work less than full-time, you don't even have access to unpaid family medical leave. And many family caregivers are part-time employees because they're family caregiving.
Absolutely.
When we do a survey of family caregivers, about 67% said they had to either leave the workforce entirely or they had to reduce their hours to part-time to be able to meet their family's needs. So this is a big deal if you are a part-time employee or you're managing multiple jobs. So maybe you are working full-time hours but have part-time jobs. This enables you to have some buffer that you're self-funding to fall back on if you really need to take time actually away from work to do caregiving.
And then there's also another proposal on there to expand family and medical leave to include other family members. Could you speak to that a little bit more?
Yeah, sometimes policy needs to evolve to match what I call the reality of people's lives. And I think that there are a lot of families where, you know, people who aren't necessarily parents are becoming caregivers. There are a lot of examples of grandchildren who are the primary caregivers for grandparents, for example. And the law doesn't reflect that. The law really has a definition that of family members that is nuclear in nature. And we know that, you know, family sizes are getting smaller. Geographically, people may be more dispersed.
Right.
And the person who is closest or knows the person best may be a cousin
who
wouldn't be eligible for family medical leave because they don't qualify. And so I think expanding that definition, not only does it allow the people who are in the person's life to be able to pitch in, it broadens the pool as much as possible so that there are more family caregivers who can all step in and do a small thing instead of only a couple people having to do it all. In those situations, when you do have multiple family members. So I think we're really trying to say we need to change the definition to match the reality of the lives that we see and know about on the ground.
Well, that makes perfect and total common sense to me. So there's two other bullet points here. One, I don't think takes a lot of explanation, and that the board has a push to help increase respite funding by over 200,000. Did I get that number correct? 200,000.
Yep. Yes, you did.
Okay, and then the other one is probably could use a little more explanation. I know that this is one that gets Kristen excited, and that is establish a family caregiving tax credit that allows taxpayers to deduct up to $7,200 per year, the average annual out-of-pocket cost incurred by family caregivers. Can you tell us a little bit more about that one in just a few minutes, and then I want to get over to Molly.
Sure. This has actually been a legislative proposal in the last couple of sessions. And what we're trying to do is recognize that family caregivers often end up putting a lot of their own money to meet their person's needs, even when their person may be in family care or IRIS or a program that is trying to help take care of them. When I talk to a lot of family caregivers, they talk about how much time they spend transporting people from here to there, for example. You know, mileage, all the extra supplies that people get, it adds up really, really fast. And that $7,200 figure is actually from a study AARP does almost every year, trying to assess how much out-of-pocket expenses is the average person putting in addition to everything else that family caregiver, you know, that goes in with caregiving. And that's the figure, about $7,200 per year. A tax credit is something that, you know, you get back retroactively after the fact. But it's, you know, as we say, better than a sharp stick in the eye, because right now there is no reimbursement for any of those expenses that we know people have. And there are a lot of people who, again, if they've left the workforce or reduced their hours, their income isn't the same. A lot of family caregivers are forced to reduce their income to do this work, and then they have high out-of-pocket expenses that aren't covered right now.
That's why I got excited about it the first time I read it, is that I knew that I had to take myself out of the workforce a couple different times for caregiving issues. And I was like, wow, an extra $7,200 would have really helped at the end of the year. And I hadn't thought about I don't remember my years very well, but there was a period of time where I was able to deduct some of Nicole's medical expenses, and now I can't. And so again, that tax credit would have really helped that. So I think these are wonderful asks, and I really appreciate your education on them. We do want to give Molly a little bit more time to talk about some of the other programs that the board has been focusing on. So Molly, what are some of the additional programs that you would like to promote right now while you've got the mic?
Yeah, I'm going to start with one that's rather related to what Tammy was talking about. On March 23rd, we host a Disability Advocacy Day with some of our advocate partners. This is a day where people with disabilities, family members, allies come together. We meet up at the Monona Terrace to do a debrief, talk about the budget, talk about hot topics, and then people have some time to plan what they would like to say to their legislators, and then they go to the Capitol as a group with people in their district, and they talk with their legislators. We set up appointments. Oftentimes, you end up talking to a staffer, but that's totally fine because they oftentimes have a lot of influence in their office. So this is a great way to talk to your legislator and have support to do it. So if this is of interest for you, we encourage you to check it out. You also can talk to your legislator anytime you want, though. So if any of these things that Tammy's talking about, you also can go online to figure out who your legislator is and make sure to call them and share with them what you are interested in or concerned about. Okay, so that's one thing. The other two things are partners with business. This is a grant opportunity that we currently have open right now, and I'll give the application and information to Kristen and Liza so they can post it. This is a coaching opportunity where we work with employment service providers and businesses and schools to try to do a great job of supporting people with disabilities on the job. Our focus is to help businesses be able to provide the support that an employee needs through coworkers or the supervisor. If the person needs more support than is typically provided by a coworker, but you might just, you know, offer your coworker at work, then there's a way that there's an avenue that they can get reimbursed. The business can get reimbursed for any lost productivity of that other coworker. So it's a really great model. It's utilizing natural support, so people on the job that are already there. It helps the employee with a disability be a more integrated part of that work environment. And it's great. So this current grant opportunity is for employment service providers to receive technical assistance and some funding support. So if you know any employment service providers who might be interested, we'd love for you to spread the word. And then the last thing I wanted to share is the Youth Leadership Forum. This is a week-long workshop, if you will, in the summer. It's held at Edgewood College, and it's for high school age students with disabilities. We're looking at sophomores, juniors, and seniors. They can be students with any type of disability. It does not have to be a developmental or intellectual disability. And it's really a leadership and career development type program. The students stay on the campus, so they get to stay in the dorms, meet people from all over the state who also are interested in leadership and careers. They have a chance to go to the Capitol to meet their legislators as well. So it's a great opportunity for people to begin, you know, to get out of their house for a little while in the summer, be independent on their own, you know, on a dorm, in a campus with some support. So those applications are also available. So I will share those as well.
Great.
And I think that's it.
That's it. And I would have to say that my son did the Youth Leadership Forum last year. I would recommend it. He went with me to Green Bay a few weeks ago, and we're driving up there, and he says, I made a plan. I'm going to go see a movie with Tony up in Green Bay. And I'm thinking, who is Tony? And no, you can't see a movie with a friend in Green Bay. It's like 2 hours away. And no, it turns out it's a friend that he made at the youth forum, and they stayed in contact and they got together and went out to a movie. And then he came to the hotel the next day and went swimming. So it's an opportunity for these kiddos to make some lifelong friendships as well. And then also on the Disability Advocacy Day, can you remind me, if you said that, is that something that you enroll in, sign up for online? And if so, where can listeners go to do that?
Yeah, so there is online registration, because we have to make your appointment with your legislator. So can I give you guys the link to our website for
that? Yeah, but go ahead and say it. You can say it on air too.
Oh, let me look it up.
Sorry. Most people can rattle it off. I should be able to. Well, you could just, well, anyway, you got it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is wi-bpdd.org.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So WI. If you go there, you can also connect with us, so you can get our emails, our monthly newsletter, so you know about all these opportunities.
Yeah, it's a great newsletter. I like that it doesn't come with too much to it, but it has enough details to it. I really appreciate it. I learn a lot from it.
And she especially likes the fact, let's not lie, that your daughter was like on the cover of December. So yeah.
That was, kind of fun to see Nicole with her noise reduction headphones, the picture of her on the newsletter. So that's awesome. We would love to ask you guys a couple powerful questions, because that is something that we do usually in our segment three. We only have a couple minutes left, so I'm hoping we can sweet talk you to stick around a little bit for segment four to maybe answer these, because I think what the feedback we get from listeners is, it's nice to hear some of these professionals talk from a personal place. And so I'm just curious about what are you the most proud of in your work with the board so far?
We'll start with Molly.
Oh, go ahead. You want to switch?
No, go ahead. It's all right.
I saw you. I just saw your name, so we'll start with you.
Okay. I would say that I really love the seemingly small attitudinal changes or perspective shifts that happen sometimes internally for myself and with the people we work with and the grantees we work with that really create a lot of impactful systemic change. So my example is, you know, I think about job coaches, people that support people with disabilities on the job. And if you view your role as taking care of somebody on the job and making sure they do their work and don't get in trouble versus viewing it as skill building and supporting them to be connected to their other, to their coworkers, to do their work, to be independent, to ask questions of their coworkers or supervisors. And then your role is to fade out and get out of there as soon as you can, so that person can be an integrated part of that, that workplace. I think that's a huge shift. So I love those little shifts that start to happen when we have the opportunity to work with people and even for myself personally.
That's a beautiful one, and we can speak a little bit more about it when we come back right after this short break. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we've been speaking with Molly Cooney and Tammy Jackson from the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. And man, the time flies, doesn't it?
Oh, terribly.
Such an interesting conversation that we had about some of the programs that the board has, and then some of the discussions around the budget and what is being advocated for caregivers. But we want to finish our time with you today with powerful questions, and we had asked one of Molly going into the commercial. So now, Tammy, you are on the hot seat, and what were we going to go with? What are you most proud of?
Well, you know, honestly, the board has done some things. I mean, we have done some big changes, things that haven't existed before, like supported decision making, you know, and we've also done some things like stop bad stuff from happening, right? We've ended wait lists in the state. I think folks don't realize that in Wisconsin, we are looked at as a national leader in a lot of ways. And we've done it not as a board, but in partnership with people just like you. I can't tell you how many legislators have, you know, said to me personally after meeting with constituents, I had no idea that was a problem. I've learned so much from my, like, legislators who came into the legislature with a totally different background, knew nothing about disability issues, never been exposed to it, who are ending up being actually strong and powerful advocates for our population because they meet constituents like you. And I think that just speaks to the power of, you know, people who have lived experience.
Definitely. I appreciate that. And I agree with you that we are a leader in the country, because when I talk about some of the resources that Nicole gets, people are just shocked. And so it's a big part of why we're so proud and happy to be here in Wisconsin. But Tammy, you really deferred that to the board and not you. And so I know you are the board, but I also want you to recognize, as a caregiver, you don't need to put yourself in the back seat. Yes. Is there something specific you're proud of?
Well, I will go on Molly's theme of watching, you know, you doing your little finger wagging here and watching other people shift around you. I think non-driver transportation has been the biggest shift. You know, we started off as a scrappy group of advocates saying, hey, transportation is the biggest barrier for family caregivers who have to do a lot of the schlepping, right? Mm-hmm. But also, it's the limiting factor on whether people can get health care, get a job, take a job, keep a job. And it's not
or
only
vote.
A disability issue. Vote.
That was the big one that hit me, was the voting one.
Yep. It's an older adult issue. It's a low income, you know, don't own a car or there's one car in the household issue. It's an issue for anybody who's schlepping young kids. And it wasn't recognized as a problem until our very own Department of Transportation said, huh, here's a group of advocates who are saying that we should pay attention. Let's do an advisory committee. And they did. And I have to tell you, I'm one of the co-chairs. So, yay, you know, I'm not blameless.
I was going to say, toot your own horn already.
Right. Exactly.
I'm one of the co-chairs, me and Denise Jess. Okay. And together with the department, we have, in the 2 years, the Department of Transportation, these wonderful band of can-do engineers, they have blossomed. They have gone from skeptics to, you know what? We've designed a whole transportation system that totally relies on cars. And we have 31% of the population who doesn't drive. Mm-hmm. This is a major equity problem. I mean, it's just been foundational, changed the way the agency thinks about the actual mission it has. Aww. And it was because we sent a letter, you know, and we had a person in leadership who read that letter and went, you know, maybe we should think about this. And they were willing to allow the space to breathe for the right group of people to come together. And I tell you, the department staff has just embraced it and really started thinking about things differently. Just like Molly said, you know, when you start to have that paradigm shift, it's hard to put back in the box. Mm-hmm.
Well, I want to personally thank you for your work on that, because I will say I have a young adult with autism and he is in a college program. I feel hopeful that the outlook is good, that he will live independently and be able to work. But transportation is going to be an issue. He's probably never going to drive. And you're right, that can just derail everything right from the get-go. So I want to thank you, both of you, for all of the work that you have done personally, for my family not even knowing about it, and families throughout the state of Wisconsin.
Exactly. And we definitely need to have both of you back. So I hope you're both willing to do that. And we can dive into deeper conversations about advocacy work and about the programs that you were telling us about, Molly. Sound good?
It's great. Thanks so much for having us on.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yep. Yes, thank you.
All right, so you know what sticks out to me, Liza?
What?
Their goal and mission about having people with disabilities live their best lives.
Right?
Isn't that cool?
It is. It's what they're all about.
Yeah.
And they work so hard.
Yeah.
And they make it look easy. Like they're some of the happiest group of people, right?
Right. Exactly. And every event that we've gone to that the board has sponsored or that the board is behind has been so positive, well organized. And like you said, just upbeat. And they've amazing made it look work. Seamless. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love that. Anything specific stand out to you?
I think it all does. I just wish that we had more time, like a lot mm-hmm. more time. I would love to have Tammy back and talk more about the budget requests. There are a lot of things out there above and beyond just the family caregiver portion that impacts family caregivers, but need to be heard and need the caregivers that are listening to make the phone calls and do, you know, or send the email to do their part to make sure that this stays on the legislator's radar.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And that it really can be as simple as an email and as simple as a phone call. And then it can also be a little bit more daring to participate in Disability Advocacy Day, March 23rd.
You can do what we did back in the day. I shared this on air when autism was not covered by insurance, mm-hmm. and we took our kiddo down there to advocate at the Capitol, and he took a big old dump in one of the legislators' offices that was opposed to autism being covered by insurance. So that was advocacy work. Well done.
Nice work, Caden.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so that's it, is that we have to make sure that we keep the people behind this, right? And
right.
So that's why I just love the whole idea that it's for people living their best lives.
Yes.
All right, we've got a couple of last promotions we need to wrap up with tonight. We are excited about this new and still growing civic media network of radio stations that we're a part of, and so we're doing something big to celebrate. It's the $1 million advertising giveaway.
But can I just add that it's not like me and you, right? We're right. not giving away $1 million.
No, heck no. Okay. I don't have $1 million to give away.
The first time I read that, I'm like, we're giving away, wait, what, Kristen?
No, but yes. So if you're interested, we really want small businesses. If you're interested, please go to the Civic Media website. So it's civicmedia.us. There's a link right there to learn about it. It's a short thing to fill out. And if you win, you can get $5,000, $20,000 in free advertising. This is all happening next Thursday, January 26th.
I think that wraps it up for this week. Thank you for joining, and we'll see you next week on the Empowered Caregiver Show.